May it please the court, counsel. My name is Marshall Tannick. I represent the appellant, Thomas Nagel, who is in courtroom here with his wife, Kelly, this morning. Mr. Nagel was a veteran, 27 years of the Jamestown Police Department. He had an unblemished record there, was well regarded. He was terminated from his employment in March of 2016. That termination occurred after he was interviewed on a television station, KVLY, out of Fargo, concerning a whistleblower report. He did not make the whistleblower report. He doesn't know who was involved in the whistleblower report. The reason that he ended up being interviewed is because the TV report, and the whistleblower report concerned an alleged misuse of a county jet ski. Didn't even involve the Jamestown Police Department.
Is the point about him not making the report in the record? And the reason why I say that is because I know there's no proof that he made the report, but I don't know that there's any proof that he didn't make the anonymous report.
He denied it. He denied making the report.
But that's the only, that would be the... Okay.
I thought he said, that the opposing counsel brief says, I can say it was somebody that would be in fear of losing their job.
He was asked by the television reporter, who do you think would make a report like this? And he speculated, well, I suppose it would be someone who might be in fear of losing his job.
But I can say, did I quote it right or wrong?
He said, I can say that. That's
okay.
What he said.
Well, that means he knew.
No, the record is that he didn't know.
Well, there is no. Creates a strong inference.
It doesn't.
It was clearly not proven. Yes. But to say categorically that the record establishes that he didn't make the report, I think, is exaggerating.
Well,
the record.
He denied it. No one has contended that he made the report. He passed a polygraph examination, which is admissible under North Dakota law. So there's no contention has been made that he made the report himself. At all.
Now, there's also the Facebook post, though, too. Yes. Like, didn't it appear on his alter ego Facebook account?
So
doesn't that create a problem in terms of potentially inferring that he made the report? I don't want to belabor this point because I don't know that it's important to the outcome. I just want to be sure about the record.
Well, at a minimum, Your Honor, what that reflects is that there's a fact dispute as to whether he knew who made the report or not. And that, of course, and this comes to the court on summary judgment, so, of course, all factual inferences must be taken in favor, must be construed or drawn in favor of Mr. Nagel, the appellant. But at any rate, we believe the record reflects that he didn't know who did the report, made the report, and he didn't do it himself. But there are two primary issues before the court this morning. One is the First Amendment issue as to whether he was terminated for exercising of First Amendment rights. And the second primary issue is whether he was deprived of due process of law because he was not given notice and an opportunity to respond to the charges that were leveled against him prior to his termination.
Now the briefs were all filed before our recent en-bank decision in Morgan.
Right.
So would you please distinguish Morgan for me?
Well, in this case, Your Honor, there is no the charges that ultimately led to that underlie the termination Mr. Nagel started with a search for this whistleblower. That's what they were searching for, and that's what they were investigating. He had an investigative interview, and during that interview, he asked, well, what are the charges against me? What am I being accused of? What am I supposed to respond to? And they said, well, there are no particular violations. On another occasion, he was told, well, look in the rule book. You're charged with violating our rules and regulations. Well, Police Department has a 20-page rule book with 150 violations. He was never told at all what he was suspected or accused of violating.
Now, what I'm hearing is part of your due process argument.
Right.
I would think my Morgan question addressed the First Amendment.
Well, yeah, and the First Amendment issue, Your Honor.
Answer that first.
Sure, I will. Essentially, there's a four-part standard for the First Amendment. One is whether the right was clearly...
The question was distinguish Morgan. Right. Why does it not almost control adversely your First Amendment claim?
Well, because in this case, Your Honor, there was a clearly established right here to speak out, as Mr. Nagel did, or at least to be interviewed on the television station. The clearly established right was recognized by Chief Ettinger himself. The chief said he got 150 complaints about what Mr. Nagel said on the television station. And there was no verification of that, no confirmation of that. But the chief said, I told the people who were complaining that I can't do anything about this because it's a, quote, free speech issue. So the chief himself recognized that there was a clearly established right for Mr. Nagel to be interviewed on the television station. Now, he turned around later and supported the termination of Mr. Nagel. Nonetheless, he was aware that there was a clearly established First Amendment right because he said so himself. Secondly, in this case, Mr. Nagel was there clearly was a public concern here. Chief Ettinger said, yes, there is a public concern about the alleged misuse of county property. The officer who conducted was called the Police Review Board, Officer Blinsky, who was delegated to conduct the review board that led to the termination of Mr. Nagel, also said, yes, that's a very important issue. It's a matter of public concern. And lastly, the city administrator, Mr. Fuchs, who gave Mr. Nagel the termination letter along with the mayor, he said this was a matter of public concern, the question of whether there was a misuse of county property.
So what about the antecedent question? I know you're covering qualified immunity in response to Judge Loken's question, but the antecedent question here is whether the speech was protected at all. Did it arise out of his position as a police officer? And here you have him show up. Yes, the police station wasn't in the background. Handcuffs, gun on him, badge off. And you have them referring to him as the president of the Fraternal Order of Police, and you have them mentioning that he's a police officer. Why doesn't that, at least under, what is it, Garcetti, make it unprotected?
Well, in Garcetti, the claimant in Garcetti's job duties were concerned the processing of the legal proceedings that paperwork that he went out and then said was part of, that he thought was illegal. That was part of his job duties. Mr. Nagel's job duties were not to be a spokesman for the police department.
Now, wait, we've applied Garcetti in situations where it wasn't clearly part of the job description.
It's been applied in different ways, but the Garcetti case holds that stands for the proposition that First Amendment protection doesn't apply if it's part of the job duties. In this case, the chief of police directed the reporter to go to talk to Nagel. This isn't the kind of case in the many of the typical whistleblower cases where the claimant himself or herself is the whistleblower. Mr. Nagel did not seek out the media. He did not try to derogate anybody in the police department or the sheriff's department. The reporter came to the police department and went to the police chief, Chief Ettinger. And she said, we have this issue here that's come up about this misuse of county property. And then Chief Ettinger said, well, I don't know anything about that. Why don't you go talk to Sergeant Nagel? So the chief himself directed the reporter to talk to Sergeant Nagel.
Isn't that worse, though? I mean, no, because the Eighth Circuit, and this is the case law that Judge Loken's referring to, if the statements owed its existence or owed their existence to his job duties, then it's unprotected. And here you're making an argument that the chief of police actually asked him to go out and conduct the interview, which means it was almost certainly within his job duties. If I had a supervisor and they told me what to do, that statement would owe its existence to my job duties.
But the chief didn't tell him to do the interview. The chief directed the reporter and said, why don't you go talk to Mr. Nagel? In fact, the chief said, I think that might be a FOP, Fraternal Order of Police issue. That's what the chief thought. He said, well, I think that's a union issue. Why don't you go talk to Nagel? And the reason he suggested that the reporter talk to Nagel is because the chief didn't think it was a police-related matter. He thought it had something to do with the union. So the reporter asked Mr. Nagel if he would talk about it. Mr. Nagel took comp time, took off his badge. He wasn't in uniform. They went outside the building, and the reporter, on her initiative, interviewed Mr. Nagel because the chief had directed her to talk to Nagel. The chief didn't direct Nagel to talk to the reporter at all.
So you would draw that as, had the chief talked to Nagel about doing it, would the case be different in your view?
That would be certainly a different element. If the chief gave direction to an employee, a subordinate, as you said, Your Honor, to go talk to somebody, then they'd be acting at the direction of their supervisor, and it could be then within the realm of the job duties within the ambit of Morgan or even Garcetti. But that's not what happened here. And the KVLY report identified Mr. Nagel as a police officer, but he didn't identify himself as a police officer. He didn't come forward, as in these other cases, and said, I'm a police officer. I want to talk to you about a whistleblowing matter or an issue that I'm bringing up. It was the reporter and his choice as to how to describe Mr. Nagel. In the television station said he was a Jamestown police officer, which he was, but that wasn't what the story was about. The story was about this alleged misuse of county property. So Mr. Nagel was not in any way, as unlike the Morgan case, acting with it as a spokesperson for the police department or carrying out job duties or in any way relating this to his job at all. The only connection really was that Mr. Nagel happened to be in the building at the time, and the chief thought it was a fraternal order of police issue.
What about if we get past that and you get to qualified immunity, the Pickering balancing test, right? So even if you prove that it's protected, I mean, there's a lot of evidence in the record that this caused a lot of disruption between the city police office and the sheriff's department, which was down the hall. They wouldn't even work with Mr. Nagel, and it was disrupting the operations of both offices potentially. So under Pickering balancing, don't they win under that?
No, because the sheriff was upset, no question about it. In fact, within moments after that television program was aired at the 6 o'clock news, the sheriff was on the line talking to people about it. So the sheriff was upset, but it had nothing to do with the Jamestown Police Department. Nobody was upset within the Jamestown Police Department. Mr. Nagel continued his work as if nothing happened. The TV report was November 5th, 2015, and his termination was 4 months later. There was no effort to suspend him or put him on investigative leave or administrative leave. He conducted his job just as he had before.
I thought there were members of the sheriff's department, A, that didn't want to work with him, and then there was a joint investigative committee set up between the two offices to investigate his conduct.
Yeah, there was. There was an investigation.
You're saying we just ignore the sheriff's department because that wasn't his employer.
I didn't say just ignore it. I'm saying there was no significant...
You carefully avoided the upset of the sheriff's department, just said no one at the police department was upset.
Well, I did.
The chief.
Well, I did say that. I said there was no disruption of the police duties and activities and functions. That people in the sheriff's department were upset at Nagel because he was on this television newscast that had these allegations. He didn't make the allegation, but the hotline report was about misuse of the equipment by the sheriff's department. So the sheriff was upset, but the police department wasn't upset at all. Mr. Nagel continued his work there. There was no effort to suspend him or put him on a leave of absence. And in fact, the
sheriff's department didn't ban him from there. They're part of the building.
They were upset. They said they wouldn't. They didn't want Nagel as part of the building. But that didn't affect any of his functions as a police officer doing his work with the Jamestown Police Department.
Not his functions that we worry about in our many law enforcement cases.
It's the
function of the department of the law enforcement agency.
Well, the law enforcement agency here is the Jamestown Police Department.
No,
that's who his employer
was. It's
the
combination.
Well, he's employed by the Jamestown Police Department. The Pickering balancing test takes into account any disruption on the part of your employer, not some other employer. And the test is whether there's disruption in the workplace of his employer.
The record, though, suggests that the sheriff's department, because they were, A, geographically proximate, but, A, had overlapping jurisdiction, that they actually worked together a lot and that this disrupted the ability of the two departments to work together.
There were some conclusory statements made. There is not one single fact, not one single piece of evidence, not one single case, not one single incident that reflects any disruption. There's just a conclusory statement that this was disruptive because they were angry. In fact, the police officer who was tasked with investigating this matter, Major Johnson, testified that he had a good working relationship with Mr. Nagel at all times. Other officers likewise said they had no problem working with Mr. Nagel. So there's nothing in the record that suggests that in any way or respect there is a disruption in the police in the functions of the police department, which was where Mr. Nagel worked. There was certainly some people who were upset in the sheriff's department. They were grousing about it, and they said they were upset. And they made conclusory statements of disruption. But any balancing test ought to take into account the actual facts of the case, which are devoid of any evidence that there was any impingement, impairment, or dereliction or derogation of any duties of the police department. Nothing changed. Mr. Nagel kept working up to the very end, which leads me into the due process argument. Mr. Nagel was never told what the charges were against him. He was never given an opportunity to respond. In fact, the way he found out he was terminated is he opened his mail one day and got a letter from the mayor and the city administrator saying, you're fired.
Now, I thought they told him beforehand, at least in two different instances, that he had that what they were investigating was discrediting the department, which was an ethical code violation. Am I wrong about that?
They made general statements about ethics and code violations. They didn't say what the code violation was, what the ethical violation was. That's just a general statement that doesn't suffice under the case law.
At the start of his interview, he was investigating the tip?
Yes, that's what they were investigating, but he didn't say that there was any violation by virtue of the tip. In fact, under the case law...
The tip was false. That'd be a pretty good inference. When did it become common knowledge the tip was false?
Shortly after that television program. Whether the tip was true or false doesn't really matter, though. I mean, protected conduct under the First Amendment doesn't depend upon whether it was true or false.
If he made a false tip...
He didn't know it was false.
Well, okay.
And the First Amendment protects people from making statements, even if they're false, if they don't know they're false.
We were talking about due process.
Well, you asked about the false tip, but the due process...
But that's relevant to whether he knew about the investigation. I mean...
He was never told what the investigation was about. He was never told that. And in fact, the police review board that ultimately recommended the termination came up with a number of different reasons that Mr. Nagel was never asked about. The police review, Mr. Nagel was never told what the charges against him were. And the case law in this jurisdiction, and there's numerous cases, the Sutton case, the Smutka case, the Gronewald case, and other case law, indicates that before termination occurs for a public sector employee, they have to be given a minimal due process, which means that at a minimum they have to be given notice of the charges and an opportunity to respond. Mr. Nagel got none of those. Last point I'll make is on the question of qualified immunity. Even if there is qualified immunity as to Chief Ettinger, that does not apply to the city. This court's decision in the Mogard versus City of Milbank case holds that qualified immunity does not apply to a defendant municipal government. So even if there is qualified immunity, it doesn't apply.
Mr. Schmidt.
May it please the court, counsel. The majority of the briefing in this case from the appellant, Mr. Nagel, has been to basically relitigate the merits of his termination. That's not what we're here for. There's two constitutional issues at play. One is the First Amendment. The other one is due process. I'll start with the First Amendment. And I think the questions from the bench during Mr. Tanning's presentation were directly on point. First of all, he wasn't speaking as a citizen. Watch the video. He's identified as a Jamestown police officer. Nobody in the district court hit the nail directly on the head with their analysis on this. No reasonable individual is going to watch that video and say, this was someone speaking as a private citizen. Second part of that is he wasn't speaking on a matter of public concern. If you even go and look at his own statements, he went out there to clear his Facebook name, Dominic Brim.
You don't think, though, that if there was some sort of corruption, if the sheriff's department was buying jet skis and using it on weekends, that wouldn't be a matter of public concern to the populace?
It absolutely would be a matter of public concern to the populace. Just as sexual harassment was considered a member of subject of public concern to the populace, but the comments made by the public official in that case, which is cited in our brief, related to personal animosity between that individual and the leadership. So we're looking at the point of his speech. His speech was to admit that, yes, my name is Dominic Brim on Facebook, but alleged I didn't send that picture into KVLY. And then he made a comment about whoever did send it was someone in fear of losing their job. Neither one of those issues has anything to do with public concern, and they also are not someone speaking in the status of a citizen for the First Amendment.
But isn't the test objective, not subjective, so that we don't look at, maybe I'm wrong about this, but we don't look at necessarily only at what he was thinking, but whether the allegation, if true, would be a matter of public concern?
I think that the court could consider it that way, but... When you're talking about whether the allegation was true, whether the government was actually using the jet ski for someone from the government was using the jet ski for private use, I think that Heffernan case actually says that there is a cause of action under 1983, even if it is based on a false belief. So the truth or falsity of that isn't necessarily dispositive of the case. But what we are looking at is what was his status when he was making this statement? He's identified as a Jamestown police officer in the video. That's pretty indicative. And the district court, again, hit the nail right on the head with that.
What about the actions he took ahead of time? So he takes his badge off. He takes makes sure that the police station isn't in the background. And I understand there's all these other indicia, but he did try, I guess, to remove some of the signals that he was a police officer before conducting the interview.
I would agree with the fact that he tried to remove some of the signals that he was a Jamestown police officer. He very readily admitted that he was speaking as a member of the FOP. And when we look at what this circuit has done with FOP membership in the Tyndall case, they've said that doesn't count. You don't get protection just because you're speaking as an FOP member. And in that particular case, the individual wore an inappropriate costume to a Halloween party that was sponsored by the FOP. So the FOP doesn't provide a shield. It certainly does. That Tyndall case certainly doesn't abolish qualified immunity in this case. It doesn't put the nature of the speech beyond doubt. It doesn't clearly define the law on that issue. Which gets back to the Pickering test. Even if we were to say that he was speaking as a citizen, he was speaking on a matter of public concern, we still get to the Pickering test. And when we look at the Tyler versus City of Mountain Home, Arkansas case, which is cited extensively in our brief, this court has previously noted that law enforcement is given substantial deference when they make decisions that are supposed to promote the efficiency of their operations. And Lyons v. Vaught, which I believe was probably the case that was being referenced earlier, this court had said that if the employer adduces evidence of disruption, qualified immunity applies. Well, we have substantial evidence that was adduced in the record in this case. The sheriff said, I don't want this guy in my office. Chief Edinger gave him an oral order on that. Mr. Nagel did file a grievance on that matter, and it was resolved informally. The sheriff said this caused substantial strain on me. It was very clearly caused a rift between the two organizations. Plus, there was a joint internal investigation that pretty much everybody in both the Jamestown Police Department and the Stutzman County Sheriff's Office were subjected to. That took up a lot of time and effort from both of these law enforcement agencies, which commonly relied on working with each other to not only protect the public, but they rely on each other to save their lives. That relationship is vital, and this court has recognized that police departments and sheriff's departments need each other. They have overlapping jurisdictions, they need each other, and when the conduct can damage that relationship, the tie goes to the department. And that's exactly what we have here. So we don't have, the district court got it, hit the nail right on the head. Wasn't speaking as a citizen, wasn't speaking on a matter of public concern, and even if so, all of the Pickering factors play in favor of the city of Jamestown in this case. Now, the other issue that was brought up on appeal is the due process claim. Essentially, what they're asking this court to do is throw Smutka completely out the window. In Smutka, this court said, we look at the pre-termination, the post-termination process, and we don't look at them in a vacuum. We see, did this person receive due process? Did they receive adequate due process? Now, there's no question that Tom Nagel was confronted with the evidence against him prior to him ever being terminated. He was asked directly about it during his internal interview with Major Johnson. And clearly,
Do you have a case where the pre-termination notice and opportunity to respond that's relied on was conducted by an investigator in a local government situation where the process would ultimately proceed a number of more steps, as opposed to the typical case where the question is, did the supervising ultimate decision maker give enough warning of what's to come?
Sure, and there are numerous cases alluded to in our brief. I believe one of them is a state court case from Washington. The name of the case escapes me right now, but it does talk about how there was an internal investigation where the charges were brought before the individual. As far as additional steps go prior to the termination, if I'm understanding your question correctly.
Well, the city council ultimately makes the decision, don't they?
No, they don't. And that's one of the other parts of this that's actually fatal to their claim as far as municipal liability goes, is the final Decision-making authority with respect to termination of employment is given to the city administrator. The mayor also signed the termination letter in this case, but the city council never made a decision on Tom Nagel's employment. The city council is the policymaker.
Okay, so why doesn't the pre-termination process obligation lie with the administrator?
I don't believe,
as opposed to an independent investigator operating at the request of two agencies, with it unknown where it would lead.
I think the Smutka case actually speaks directly to that. That was an investigation that was conducted not by the ultimate decision maker. There was a board that was the decision maker there, but there was an investigation that was conducted in that case. So I think the answer to your question is yes. But when we're looking at the overall question, was Tom Nagel afforded due process here? We can't just completely disregard the post-termination hearing where he's represented by counsel, called multiple expert witnesses. This was a 9-hour hearing. His attorney submitted a 99-page post-hearing brief. The indispensable elements of due process were clearly satisfied in this case. And there's nothing to the contrary that would, one, eliminate qualified immunity to Chief Edinger. That's for sure. And we've never even made the allegation that the city is entitled to qualified immunity. That's well established. Liability to municipalities is governed by Monell, and that's policy or custom. And it's also that city of Minneapolis case that we cited extensively in our brief, where the court gets into the exact analogy that happened here, where we have a governing board that sets the policy, but decision-making authority with respect to hiring and firing is in that case, they use the sheriff as the example. Here it would be the city administrator. And even if the decision was ultimately deemed unconstitutional, there's still no liability on the city because the city is the final policymaker and they didn't make a decision, which is exactly what we have here. But this court doesn't even need to get there in this case. There was no violation of the First Amendment. There was no violation of the 14th Amendment. Now, the other issue that was briefed is Mr. Nagel's requesting the court to impose a state law cause of action, and the district court dismissed that portion of their claim without prejudice. The North Dakota Supreme Court, the last time they addressed that issue specifically was the Christensen v. Strinden case in 1983, where they recognized that there is no private cause of action for damages vindicating rights under the North Dakota Constitution. Unlike federal law, where Congress enacted Section 1983, North Dakota does not have a corresponding statute. It doesn't exist. Mr. Nagel hasn't pointed to any. He's merely asking the federal judiciary to step in and create a state law cause of action when North Dakota legislature and the North Dakota Supreme Court have both declined to do so to date. And that same issue was recently decided by the North Dakota Federal District Court in North Dakota in the Sander case, which is cited in our brief, where they basically just disposed of that argument and said we're not taking the extraordinary step as a federal court of imposing a state law right under the Constitution. If there's no further questions, I will respectfully ask the court to affirm the holding of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Tanick used his time. I think the case has been thoroughly briefed. What you have something you'd like a minute for?
Give me a minute. I guess I've used up my time in the argument. So
I'll give you a minute.
Just a couple comments on the due process issue. The case law indicates that at a minimum, while the advance notification and opportunity to be heard doesn't have to be substantial, at a minimum, the employee has to be given some kind of indication of what he's being accused of. And the cases that we talked about cited in our brief indicate that there is, in many cases, a list of charges against the individual or some kind of specification of what the charges were. Not so here. Furthermore, there has to be some opportunity to talk, have a, address the supervisor or the decision maker. That didn't happen here. Mr. Fuchs and the mayor who made the termination decision never had allowed Mr. Nagel to know what the charges were.
I think that's been well briefed. So
And the last point I would make is on the Tyndall case, on the FOP. I'll make this point. The city can't shield itself from liability here simply because the council didn't make a decision. The city administrator and the mayor acted on behalf of the city. The termination was made by the city, and therefore the claims arise against the city as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Cases got a lot of issues that have been thoroughly briefed and argued, and we'll take it under advisement. Does that complete morning's arguments? Very good. The court will be in recess until 9 o'clock.